and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into our 7th annual anniversary. It snuck up on us.
It did. I looked at the calendar and I did the math and I was thinking, man, this is like the 7th anniversary of Bend the Knee here. Totally crazy. And so what we're going to do today is we're actually going to go back and redo the prologue of A Game of Thrones, because I look at the data and I see that so many people are still downloading and listening to that episode. So they're going back and starting it. And, you know, the podcast has changed so much over the years that maybe this could serve as like a new intro. And we could talk a little bit about, you know, some of the changes the podcast has made over the years and who we are. And perhaps maybe this is your first episode you're listening to. Just totally crazy, some of the things that's happened over the years. You know, when we started, I had hair, I weighed 20 pounds less, and I wasn't wearing glasses, right? You know,
so I wasn't here, Matt.
Jimmy wasn't even here.
Right? We didn't know each other.
Yeah. So totally wild to sit and think about. But yeah, I mean, if a lot of people are maybe pressing this is like, I'm even going to relabel it as like maybe like episode one or something like that. Mm-hmm. So as sort of like a intro to the podcast. Well, who we are is a Game of Thrones Song of Ice and Fire podcast. We're rereading the Song of Ice and Fire books, still waiting on Winds of Winter all these years later, which is wild to think about, but we are slowly making our way through. I thought we'd be maybe a little further along, but all the shows and everything that came out, and you know, we did some big iceberg theories, diving into the deepest, darkest, craziest theories, and we've done a lot of those. We have a Patreon as well with tons of extra content you can all go check out of even more like the wildest, crazy, deepest theories. A YouTube channel, TikTok, all of these things. So TikTok didn't even exist, right? And when we started,
used to pay a lot more.
Yeah, that is correct as well. So that's you know, a little bit of who we are. And what we're gonna do today is we're gonna go back to the prologue of A Game of Thrones, the first chapter in this whole series, dive into it. And you know, now we've gone through so many theories and mindsets and all these things, Jimmy, that we can kind of have a reevaluation of this chapter.
Yeah, the prologue changes drastically every time I reread it, and it's almost not recognizable to me thinking back. I can still remember the first time I read the prologue many, many years ago and just being like kind of enamored with what are these like zombie-like things, and then it leading right into the first chapter with the beheading and Bran and everything. But now when I reread it, it's almost like a totally different experience with obviously all the context of the series, but also I've become much better of a reader. And I actually broke this prologue down before on YouTube, not on my channel, actually, but on a friend of mine. His name is AP Canavan, and he goes by A Critical Dragon. He's actually a developmental editor for fantasy books. And we went over the prologue and just kind of did a close reading and broke some stuff down. And there's a lot of really cool stuff about this prologue from a writing standpoint that kind of sets up the series and really sets the tone for what George is setting out to accomplish with subtle hints towards things, just really good writing overall. So it's exciting always to go back to the beginning. We should say we are continuing our Storm of Swords reread, but wanted to do this for the 7th year anniversary. Something kind of special.
Absolutely. You know,
looked at the calendar and said, oh my goodness, how long have I been here, Matt? How long have I been on the show?
At least 2 years.
I think it's 3 now, right?
Coming up on 3. House of the Dragon season 1 was where you, but you had made several appearances before that.
Yeah, and I've been listening since pretty much the beginning. I mean, I think it was maybe 6 months after you guys started the podcast, I found it.
Yeah,
and was always writing in. And
Jimmy made a website for us, and then we kind of became friends and Patreon hangouts and all these things. And
ended up at your wedding.
That's right. Jimmy and I talk every day now, pretty much. Yeah, you know, sending each other memes or something. So, just it's so great to look back, you know. And then you know, for if you are listening to this, maybe as your first episode, you know, listeners share their thoughts and theories, send us a raven, and we will read anything and everything on the show in so many fun, hangouts with listeners. We should probably do another one of those maybe at some point, you know, down the line to do.
Yeah, those are a lot of fun.
Do a big listener hangout and, you know, with Patreon members, and we have a Facebook group and just so many things. This just look back and see how sort of this, not only this podcast, but like the community and everything has evolved and changed over the years. So just so cool to look at everything. So with that, let's dive in to today's chapter, which is the prologue of A Game of Thrones, one of the most interesting chapters in the entire series. And to go back and reread it here is just so much fun. So Garrod, Will, and Sir Waymar Royce, three rangers from the Night's Watch, are tracking a band of wildling raiders in the Haunted Forest. Will has reported wildlings that he found, claiming they are all dead. Garrod, an older man who has been with the Night's Watch for decades, is uneasy and insists that they turn back to the wall. They have 8 or 9 days of travel ahead of them, which can turn into a fortnight if it snows. Waymar, a noble-born youth of 18, however, has the command, and after making light of Garrod's fears, he asks Will again for the details of what he saw. Will explains that he saw the wildlings' encampment. Their lean-to was covered by snow. They had no fire, and none of the wildlings moved the entire time he was watching. They were lying on the ground as if dead, but no blood was visible. Waymar suggests they might have been sleeping, but Will insists they're dead. There also was a woman up in a tree, but she did not move either. Garrod suggests the wildlings must have been killed by the cold, but Waymar points out that the weather has not been cold enough to freeze men like that. He asks Will to lead them to the dead wildlings. With night falling, the rangers ride back to the wildling camp. Both Will and Garrod sense something is wrong, but Waymar mocks them again and commands Garrod to stay behind to guard the horses. When Garrod suggests starting a fire, Waymar orders him not to. Will fears that Waymar's insolence will provoke Garrod into drawing his sword, but Garrod eventually acquiesces and no fire is lit. Will and Waymar climb up the ridge. Waymar, much noisier than Will. When Will reaches his previous vantage point, he sees that the bodies are gone. Waymar, walking upright, reaches the top of the ridge and stands in plain sight. Will warns Waymar to get down, but Waymar just laughs. Determined to find the wildlings and make his first ranging a success, Waymar orders Will to climb a tree and look for a fire. Will reluctantly climbs a nearby sentinel tree. Below him, Waymar challenges an unseen foe. Will thinks he has seen a white shadow moving below, but is not sure. He is about to call down a warning, but stops. Unsure, Waymar calls to Will with unease in his voice and turns in a circle with his sword drawn. He asks about the sudden cold, which Will also feels. An other emerges from the woods, tall, gaunt, and white, dappled with a gray-green shimmer. Waymar nervously commands it to come no further and prepares himself for battle, challenging the other to dance with him. Will notes that Waymar, in a moment, is no longer a boy, but truly a man of the Night's Watch. When more others appear among the trees, Will considers calling out a warning, but decides not to do so, as it would require him to reveal his position. The sword of the first other is made of inhumanly sharp, translucent crystal. Waymar is about to check the oncoming blows until his parry comes a bit too late. The other sword cuts through the mail under his arm. Waymar screams for Robert and charges, but as his blade strikes the other sword, it shatters. One of the shards hit Waymar's left eyes, and he falls to his knees, blinded. All of the others move in and slash at him mercilessly. Will turns his head away for a long time before looking back to see that the others are gone. When he finally dares, Will climbs down, examines Waymar's body, then picks up the knight's twisted and broken sword. He decides to bring it back to show their commanders, hoping Garrod is still with the horses. When Will stands up again, Waymar has risen and is standing over him. His remaining eye has turned blue with an icy cold touch. Waymar's hands go around Will's throat. What an unbelievable opening to this entire book series.
Oh, yeah. And there's so much here to kind of go over. And it's also our first taste of Westeros, right? Like, we've never seen Westeros. No one knows what it is. This is how you intro a series. One of my favorite prologues of all time. Really only rivaled by a few of the Malazan prologues, as well as, obviously, I love the Sphinx in the prologue of, I believe it's Feast.
Yeah, the second prologue too with Melisandre.
Oh, like, yeah.
You go ice to fire. Yeah, I agree. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, George has been a notable short story writer for a very long time prior to ever writing A Song of Ice and Fire. Did many short stories throughout the 70s and 80s. Even whenever he was a kid, he was writing shorter stories. He won multiple, I think, Nebulas and definitely Hugos for his short fiction. And a prologue, in many ways, can serve as a short story. And this is a great example of how fast George can get you hooked, kind of get in, get out. I mean, this is almost its own story from the get-go, right? We start middle scene, we end up getting into the climax with the duel with the others, and then the falling action of the running away, which then actually serves as the beginning of the novel. You can also pull out all of these patterns in his other prologues as well. So this is a person who has been grinding for a long time in writing, and you can tell that whenever he solidified this prologue to be the first thing you ever experience in A Song of Ice and Fire, that he put a lot of thought into it. So much so that I'd like to point out something that happens within the first few lines of this prologue and ask
you. Yeah, go right ahead.
This, Matt. So we should start back. Garrett urged. The woods began to grow dark around them. The wildlings are dead. Do the dead frighten you? Sir Waymar Royce asked with just a hint of a smile. Garrett did not rise to the bait. He was an old man past 50, and he had seen lordlings come and go. Dead is dead, he said, and we have no business with the dead. So what can we extrapolate from this? Because obviously we're looking at two different people from a different, like, we have not met our POV yet, right? Which is Will. So what can we gather from the line, Garrett did not rise to the bait. He was an old man past 50, and he had seen lordlings come and go. There's two things that I think we can pull from this that's very interesting. The first is that the POV that we're sitting in currently is young, because only young people think people in their 50s are old, right? Like, that's actually it's a good giveaway, right? Of starting, he's actually starting to build the POV without us even knowing his name, without us knowing who he is, what he does. So this is your first bit of characterization for Will as a POV, but also, Matt, and this is the one I actually attach to a little bit more. He was an old man past 50. 50 is not very old. So what does that tell us about this world? Life expectancy is very short. There are not a lot of people in their 90s or their 100s, right? And we'll see this as we get into the next POV where we start talking about Eddard Stark, right? Bran starts looking at Eddard Stark. And he's almost considered like this grizzled old veteran, but he's really not that old at all comparatively. Now, the show aged everybody up. We know that, which honestly, not a bad idea, especially for the younger characters. But this kind of starts setting the tone that this is a dangerous world right out of the get-go, right? There's dead. What are wildlings? They're dead. We should head back. Where are we heading back to? And this guy's 50 and considered a grizzled old man. This world must be brutal.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's also interesting to me, too. You're talking about, you know, when you think about that, this is the first thing we see, because we know the next chapter is actually George's initial thoughts of how to create this series and what it should go, which is the Bran chapter, where his first thought of creating this entire series was a young boy watching his father behead someone. And that's where it went. And so why is beheading somebody? Okay. And then you begin to piece all these things together. And it's because we know that one of these Night's Watch members leave and they run away. And I think it's such a powerful opening to the whole series. And I think the show, even though it kind of swapped the characters around a little bit in terms of who's leaving and what's going on. Yeah. I think still did a very, very good job of showing the others and setting the tone for this. It's a horror opening. But it's still fantasy and it's still very personal because it's just three people, right? You know, like a lot of books sometimes will just do massive lore dumps to start you off, to be like, this is the world. And they want you to kind of put yourself in the mind. But here, George does it in a way of, no, I want you. There's three people in the woods, you know, what's going on? One of them's in command. Who's the Night's Watch? And then you even get introduced a little bit to, obviously, the others, but you get introduced to some of these like nobles, right? Mm-hmm. Like, oh, Sir Waymar Royce. He's like, he's a noble person, but he's part of this group, the Night's Watch. And then they even talk about some other things too. Like this line here, Will had been a hunter before he joined the Night's Watch. Well, a poacher in truth. Malister Freeriders had caught him red-handed in the Malister's own woods, skinning one of the Malister's own bucks. And it had been a choice of putting on the black or losing a hand. Mm-hmm. No one could move through the woods as silent as Will. And it had not taken the Black Brothers long to discover his talent. So then you're even kind of thinking, okay, well, maybe these guys aren't so good, right? Is this like a prison sentence, right?
Yeah.
It's such a cool way to introduce people to the world, because he could have started with Daenerys.
A girl
who has been who should be one of the rightful rulers of this whole kingdom, who's been exiled and is going to lead this path of dragons. And instead of starting with dragons, he starts with the cold.
He starts with the cold, and then gives allusions to the cold being almost burning later on, which is very thematically rich, because things not being as they appear or feeling different is definitely something that George goes into, but also sets up the social hierarchy, right? Between Sir Waymar Royce, a grizzled old veteran that is not being listened to, by the way, ignoring good warnings from someone who knows what they're doing, the arrogance of the higher class. And then you have Will, who is very much like a normal common person for the most part, right? Who just happened to make a bad mistake and is now here. And what do we see at the end is that we see this huge existential threat that is after Will, and he runs away from it. He runs away, which we actually, ironically, we see the others right here. We don't see him for a very long time.
Yeah.
And we will see people taking actions to not believe about the threat and to run away from the threat in many different ways, whether it be policies or the decisions they're making to support the Night's Watch. So it's actually something that happens again and again and again in a different way. So he's kind of showing you the attitude towards this existential threat from the get-go.
Yeah. And you see in this chapter too, they talk so much about winter is coming and all of these things. And I think that's why, starting with the Starks as well, which you would go into the Bran chapter and those things, winter is coming. And that's the house words, right? Well, first we get to see what winter is. Mm-hmm. And even in here, George does such a good job with so much foreshadowing. It was the cold, Garrett said with iron certainty. I saw men freeze last winter and one before. When I was half a boy, everybody talks about the snows 40 foot deep and how the ice wind comes howling of the north. But the real enemy is the cold. So, you know, here he's talking about, well, it's just cold up here. The snow, the landscape, the, you know, environment can get you. But it does begin to drive the narrative of the cold is the real enemy. And then he goes on to talk about it steals up on you quieter than Will. And at first you shiver and your teeth chatter and you stomp your feet and dream of mulled wine and the nice hot fires. So here now you're also diving into the idea of Song of Ice and fire is good and ice is bad and fire is good. Kind of interesting too, because the ice and the others and the cold will actually sneak up on them here in just a little bit. And then, you know, we even get our first naming of Maester Aemon here. Garrett glared at the lordling. The scars around his ear holes flushed red with anger where Maester Aemon had cut the ears away. Mm. We'll see how warm you can dress when the winter comes. And then, they begin talking about the cold a little bit more. And then the next thing you know, a shadow emerges from the dark of the wood. It stood in front of Royce, tall. It was a gaunt and hard as old bones, with flesh pale as milk. Its armor seemed to change color as it moved. Here it was white as new fallen snow, then there black as shadow, everywhere dappled with the deep gray green of the trees. The patterns ran like moonlight on water with every step it took. Then a little bit further down, dance with me then, he says, which is so cool. He lifted his sword high over his head, defiant. His hands trembled from the weight of it, or perhaps the cold. Yet in that moment, Will thought he was a boy no longer, but a man of the Night's Watch. The other halted. Will saw its eyes, blue, deeper than bluer than any human eyes, a blue that burned like ice. They fixed on the longsword trembling on high, watched the moonlight running cold along the metal. For a heartbeat, he dared to hope. Hope. And of course, and we've done some Patreon deep dives into literally even this.
Oh, this is the most important paragraph.
This segment, right? Because it's so interesting. And this is, you know, I think for maybe people who are listening to this as their first episode, and you, one of the things we do here, I think that may be a little different than some of the other Song of Ice and Fire podcasts, because some are just book heavy. We tend to actually really kind of draw a comparison between the books and the show. And I think this is, you and I have talked about this, one of, if not the biggest difference between the books and the show, outside of some of the characters that will appear later in the series, like a Lady Stoneheart or Young Griff, is the difference of the White Walkers in the show versus the books. Because here, even in this chapter, something you and I have talked about many times, is they seem sentient and intelligent and very different than what we're presented with in the show, which even the White Walkers themselves, right, outside of the whites, which is the ice zombie things, these creatures, these others, these White Walkers might not have been created from the Children of the Forest in the books. The way the legends and the tales and everything go, it's possible they existed before and are their own creatures. So totally different. And they might be far more intelligent and things like that than we see in the show. So it's one of the coolest things here. Another thing that's so cool is I love that he establishes Waymar Royce as the guy to take him on, because now, even though you're part of this Night's Watch, if you're a first time reader, you're still got somebody who is a Sir Waymar Royce, right? It's not just a member of the Night's Watch, some random guy. It's a noble member of the Night's Watch, and let's dance. So you immediately establish, oh, this guy's probably pretty legit.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
As a fighter. And he even, I mean, it's also one of just the coolest lines in the whole series. I mean, he stares down a White Walker, isn't scared, and is straight up like, all right, let's go. I mean, it's so cool.
That's that nobility, that arrogance that comes with the nobility, not realizing what he's facing down. And the other's reaction is actually the biggest piece of this, right? This is the biggest piece of the prologue and the biggest piece of foreshadowing. Is they fixed, talking about the other's eyes, they fixed on the long sword trembling on high, watched the moonlight riding along the metal for a heartbeat he dared to hope. This is our nod that the others are far more intentional and intelligent than what we saw in the television show. They are checking the long sword before they engage him in combat. And then once the other checks out the sword, this is when all the rest of the walkers start coming out. The whites start coming out of the forest, right? What do you think they were checking for, Matt?
Yeah, could be maybe Valyrian steel or
that's what something. I was thinking.
Yeah,
obsidian, lightbringer
to defeat them.
Who knows, right? The Azor Ahai sword, these type of things. Like they were definitely looking at the sword intentionally. And for me, that is really cool foreshadowing for knowing that the others know of a force of the humans which can wield that would give them trouble. And maybe they wouldn't have engaged had a Valyrian steel sword had been raised. So that's really cool. And that's one sentence. That's one sentence that does all that foreshadowing.
Yeah. And then it continues on just a little bit too, right? Where they talk about when the blades meet, there was no ring of metal on metal, only a high, thin sound at the edge of hearing, like an animal screaming in pain. Royce checked a second blow, a third, then fell back a step. Another flurry of blows, he fell back again. But behind him, to the right, to the left, all around him, the watchers stood patient, faceless, silent, the shifting patterns of their delicate armor making them all but invisible in the wood, yet they made no move to interfere. And, you know, this is one of the things that I have seen. And, you know, one of the other things Jimmy and I really like to do here is pull up threads, right? I really like the Song of Ice and Fire reread subreddit, which is a group of people who are rereading the books. And you can see a lot of ideas, especially, you know, the one I'm going to pull up from here is from 2012. So this is them reading the Game of Thrones prologue in April of 2012. So that's well before the show, right?
Yeah.
Way before the show got to points to influence them.
Right. Yes.
That should have
be clear with that.
Essentially. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, in some of these, people have actually gone back and, talked about this. It says 6 years ago. That can't be right on the, maybe I have the wrong date when pulled up, but, regardless, the reread itself was created in April of 2012. Sorry, not this post, but it's still from six years ago. Which is before season 8, of course. And so they're still talking about the Night King, right? And they're saying things like, I know the Night King isn't a thing in the books, but as far as I remember, are we to assume that the one that kills Royce is the Night King or leader? Which is, you know, we still haven't gotten potentially a Night King like this in the books. But maybe this is the head of the others. None of the other White Walkers, you know, just to phrase it like that. But I guess you could also say none of the others do move in. They all.
When was this posted? What was the date that this was posted?
It says 6 years ago, so that would be. I guess maybe this was, you know, we're getting old, man.
I was going to math, actually.
We're 2025.
Yeah, this is actually purely influenced by the show. Now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah, well, I can go back further too and find another one as well. But
I keep thinking it's 2020.
I know. It's crazy. It's crazy. And that's the thing. That's why we're doing this anniversary episode. Yeah, this is cycle 4. So they have other cycles too. I just have to figure out how to dive into it to see what people are saying.
But it's just important to know that actually this is influenced by the show, right? Like
that's that quote specifically was, but there are others that are not, yeah.
I'm not completely against the idea that this might be one of like the leaders of the others, right? Like the whole movement. But I've always been pretty suspect that there being a Night King in the books as much as maybe it'll rely on the historical Night's King, possibly the Night's Queen, maybe. But it's hard to imagine that isn't a show interpretation of the prologue, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it could be. Okay, I did pull up the ones. These are from 13 years ago, which is even more. Just, yeah.
Like 2011, 2012. No,
which is even more insane to think about that Game of Thrones is like starting 13 years ago.
Yeah.
But you can see some of the things people were talking about online then too. I think what struck me most about the prologue was the others, how they were used to be terrifying, and knowing what I know, how they were almost thrown away. Like Martin is showing his strongest hand at the beginning of the game and then just throwing them away, reducing this threat to the level of Snarks and Grumpkins, making a real threat, then unmaking them. Very bold move by George.
Mm. And they're fairly different from a lot of the other fantasy prologues that I've read before.
Yeah. And I love it. I love the fact that is the case, right? That they are going up against these White Walkers, immediately showcasing the threat. And then like they said, a few chapters later, we'll get to Tyrion, who's like, oh, Grumpkins and Snarks and Cersei, and they're up there. They're by the wall. And remember, at that point, too, we've also come across not just wolves, but dire wolves that have somehow made in the next chapter. We've also come across these other magical beings or creatures that exist. And
it's a world that magic's coming back into, right? This is a world that's been devoid of magic for a very long time. And a lot of it's, you know, gone down as myth or legend or folklore. And in the very first prologue, we see literally mythical beings creeping into the scene. And then on top of that, we see direwolves. And like you said, so magic is clearly the unlikely is becoming likely once again.
Yeah. And we'll get to an old Nan story. In a couple chapters too, that goes back, and it is such a strong opening to the whole series.
Yeah,
by having these, I think it's literally about as perfect of a chapter in the entire series as you could possibly get to, because it has just enough of everything to keep you ready for the next chapter.
Yeah, and it's also very like episodic in the manner of which George opens and ends chapters, usually opening them in the middle of a scene and then ending them on a cliffhanger. It's a great writing strategy. Also translates pretty well to television.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, okay, I think that's a perfect place to end, because we have, like I said, we've done bigger, huge, deep dive discussions on this chapter. But I think I just wanted to do this as sort of a way to dive back in.
Yeah, sure.
into the series, because I look at the numbers and I see so many people are coming back and wanting to follow along, reread the podcast. So as like a fun anniversary episode, as well as a new starting point for people here.
Celebrations of the beginning, but also new beginnings. And also for all the people who fall in love with Ezra's sultry voice, now have to listen to me and my nasally, nerdy, high-pitched voice is probably not as enjoyable. So it's good to let them know what they're getting themselves into if they continue on. Matt, one last thing about this prologue. It's so special to me because I got to tour in Ireland.
I
went to the prologue scene, and there's still like, it's all cleaned up and everything, but there's still like marks in the tree from where they hit stuff, and it's very neat. And I can feel this prologue because I've been there. It's very awesome.
Yeah. And what did you think of it when you were there? I mean,
spooky.
Was everybody?
It's actually pretty spooky because the whole area is actually the haunted forest. Like, that's the idea, is like it's haunted woods in the show. That's where they always shot it. And yeah, it's a bit creepy. Also, almost, it's no surprise they filmed there. How about that? Because when you walk into that forest floor where some of the trees have been cleared out, you could actually picture like ancient civilizations being there. Like, that's what it felt like. Very haunting, very atmospheric, and feels like you can hear like a pin drop out there too, because it's so dense. It's pretty wild.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to pull just a couple quotes up here real quick. This is from 11 years ago. So this was their second cycle of reading. And you can just see some of the things people are saying. So this would be influenced, I believe, by people who had seen the first episode of Game of Thrones, but not far enough along to know, you know, like the Night King and how it's going to end. You know, this chapter really got me excited for my first reread. I think what stood out to me was the fact that Waymar brushed Will's cheek with his hand right before strangling him. We know that whites keep some of their knowledge of the past lives, but this suggests they also retain some emotion as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, because he had also just been turned. I think that's something interesting too, is that in this chapter, you see Waymar, who then also gets turned into, is now a member of the other's army.
Yeah, and that eye opens up and you're like, oh, snap.
Yeah. So yeah, it's not even just that. So let me pull up some other quotes here. Just some things. The prologue and some comments here spark a question. This is people talking about the thread they're reading from. The Night's Watch is supposed to be a meritocracy. The brothers take no titles, wives, or lands. Indeed, yet the Black Brothers are more important than their real brothers once they take their vows. And yet the Highborn are still given what appears to be preferential treatment. To some extent, this is not inconsistent. A castle with knights, and there's a lord who is the Lord Commander, but it just doesn't add up that Waymar Royce, people here have mentioned Mormont's efforts to, then he goes into some other characters that are like real deep cuts, but just something that is kind of interesting is, you know, just as knights don't live up to their vows, neither does the Night Watch live up to its billing in terms of, you know, perhaps taking down these others. But that is something interesting, you know, is that many of them do still keep their titles.
Yes, they do, which shows kind of a lineage of like how you got, like, it makes you wonder, like, well, how did a Sur get there? And there's no way that those society, like the hierarchy of society in Westeros, disappears completely the Night's Watch, even though it's supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah. So,
and it becomes political too, right? Because like we see like Tywin start trying to put different people in charge, right? So,
right. Yeah. So anyway, some interesting, just kind of fun to go back over and do another little dive into it. And perhaps maybe if some of you, if you're, you know, listening to this for your first time, then the next chapter for you will be brand one of A Game of Thrones. You do have to go all the way back. But for us, as we will continue on, we are currently, as of this recording, in chapter 49, Catelyn 4 of A Storm of Swords.
Yes, and if you like our podcast, please do not forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We'll see you next time, and remember that winter is coming.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.